Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 33. Kyle's phone rang before sunup, and he snatched it to his ear. Hello? Jones here. The President wants you here at the White House as soon as possible, but you're going to have a knock at your door in a few minutes. By the way, good morning, Kyle, he said. Wow, you guys get up early on the East Coast. We'll be dressed when they get here, said Kyle. By the way, they who? Emergency response team. They're Navy guys. We need to get those warheads located, said Jones. They have to be within a half a mile or so because I saw the peaks clearly on my laptop last night, said Kyle. Do you think you can narrow down the target area? Asked Jones. That would be a negative. I can see where they've been, but that is no indication of where they are, said Kyle. Besides, I would need two units to triangulate an exact location. Clear enough. Brief the team leader and get the hell out of there. How soon can you be here at the White House? Asked Jones. Let's shoot for 11-ish, said Kyle. Text me when the team lead is briefed on what you know, said Jones. You got it, said Kyle, and the call ended. Donna was awake in the bed with the sheets pulled up to her chin. She fixed her brown eyes on Kyle and smiled. Got time? She asked. I wish, said Kyle. Some Navy guys are going to be knocking any minute now. I thought about getting dressed. He smiled and hopped on the bed next to her. You could always put the Do Not Disturb sign out, she laughed. I better let Dick know. They're two rooms down. I'll be right back, he said, pulling on his jeans and headed out the door. Two knocks and let me back in. Within 2 minutes, there were two knocks, and Donna let Kyle back in the room. I was just thinking that in the interest of time, we probably should shower together, she said with the towel around her. Time is of the essence, right? He said, grabbing her towel and dropping his jeans. We had better hurry before Dick and Katie use up all the hot water. Is that even possible? Smiled Donna as she spun the faucet in the shower and hopped in. Within a few minutes, they had showered and dressed when the knock came at the door. Lieutenant Carson, for Kyle Kramer, came the woman's voice behind the door. Kyle opened the door. Come on in, he said. I have a crew suited up and ready for a search and recovery of two warheads. The marina is being cordoned off as we speak, she said in a professional manner. I'll show you what I have, said Kyle as he popped open his laptop and brought up the spectrometer program log. Two plutonium spikes, close together. Possibly the same reactor, she said. That's what I think, he said, waiting for her to continue. Where are the uranium spikes? She asked, pointing to the area where a gamma indication should have been. That's what I'm saying. There aren't any. The triggers were removed. These plutonium spikes could be a couple of days old by now, he said. Alpha particles can be blocked by almost anything, she said. That's what I know. I wish I could be of more help, he said. These W-84 warheads will fit in a steel drum filled with almost anything, she said, rubbing her eyebrows in a nervous motion. I'd bag 'em in a drum of gear oil, he said. What makes you say that? She asked with curiosity. I don't know. Why risk corrosion with some chemical? How many drums of 90 weight do you think there are out there at sea? He asked. Thousands, on a dozen different ships, heading all over the place, she said. Exactly, he said. We think they're leaving the country for Europe somewhere, said Donna. And you are? Asked the lieutenant. This is Donna. She's the investigative blogger that discovered your missing nukes, said Kyle. The lieutenant shook her hand firmly and looked her in the eye. Lieutenant Carson with the Naval Nuclear Security Response Team. I guess the good news is they're on a boat somewhere. You have a week to find them. Maybe 10 days. And they're gone. And that's assuming they're on a container ship, said Donna. Jesus, what if they're on a sub? Asked Kyle. Any Arctic cargo flights? Asked Donna. They could transfer to a sub off the ice, and you'd never find them. Can I get a copy of that spec log? Asked the lieutenant. Kyle rummaged through his shoulder bag and found a blank thumb drive. He quickly copied the log and handed it to her. "We'll be at the White House if you need us," said Kyle. "Thank you both," she said, saluting, and she was out the door. She touched her headset and opened a call. "Lieutenant Carson here. Needle in a haystack, sir. It's quite possible they have been sequestered in drums of gear oil." "No, sir. Our contact believes they have been at least 2 days since containerization. I'll get the manifests of all the ships departing in the last 2 days." "My opinion?" "They're gone, sir. No chance of finding them now," she said, and ended the call. Within an hour, the team was headed to the Capitol. The Purple Challenger was waved through the black iron fence and onto the grounds of the White House. Within minutes, they were entering the building by the front steps to the West Wing. "It's such a pleasure to meet you," said Lorraine as she shook Dick's hand. "Any friend of the President's," said Dick. "I'm Kyle," he said, smiling and shaking her hand. "I'm Katie, and this is Donna," she said. "I never thought I'd get a chance to see the White House," said Donna. "Well, now you're going to live here for a while. I want each of you to make a list of things you need, and I will have them brought to your rooms. We're all on the third floor. Sarah here will show you to your rooms. Can we meet in the solarium on the third floor, let's say in 1 hour, okay?" asked Lorraine as she nodded to Sarah, who held her hand out like she was starting a tour of the White House. "Right this way, everyone. Each bathroom is stocked with toiletries, and a staffer will take you all to the mall after dinner so you can get some clothes," said Sarah as her long legs led them to the elevator. "This is unbelievable," said Katie to Dick as they walked together. "I happen to know they make excellent omelets here as well," said Dick. "Do you think we'll get to meet the President?" asked Donna. "Oh, yeah, we go back a ways," said Kyle, trying not to be humble. Within a few minutes, they had been shown their rooms and washed the road from their faces. Two by two, they gathered in the solarium and sat in the oversized chairs, looking out the windows over the west side of the grounds. The floor was quiet except for the occasional noise made by the air handling system. "Sorry I'm late," said Lorraine. "Actually, I think you're about 5 minutes early," said Kyle. "Are you getting hungry?" she asked. "Getting Pavlovian," said Dick. Lorraine had a look on her face of acknowledgement, but it was clear she had been running at a fast pace the past few days. "I wanted to brief you on what is happening on an informal basis. There may be formal meetings over the next few days, but you all make up a critical part of the President's team. He has asked that you stay here in the White House because of the urgency and the danger that we are about to face," she said with her clear green eyes looking into each of theirs. "The planet is coming apart, right?" asked Donna. "Yes, it is. But the human race itself is dividing into two phases, as it were," she said. "Like light and darkness?" asked Kyle. "Something like that. The dark forces feel like they have been somehow cheated out of what is theirs by birthright. They are mad about it and are plotting to do something terrible," she said with a shiver to her voice. "Like nuke somebody?" asked Kyle. "We have reason to believe they are plotting to nuke Mecca in the next few weeks, perhaps even during the Hajj," said Lorraine. "Well, besides killing a bunch of people in white bathrobes, what's the purpose? I mean, who wants to do this?" asked Dick. "There is an ancient leadership on this planet that is working from the shadows to make mankind fight itself. It has been working for thousands of years to capture mankind," said Lorraine. "Huh. I don't get it," said Kyle. "Why wait until now, when we have so many people and so many devastating weapons? Why not take over the Earth when we were still riding horses?" "The souls that occupy human bodies are eternal. The Dark Force wants to capture every soul, forever. All of them," she said with finality. "And they plan to do that by nuking them?" asked Katie in disbelief. "The Nephilim believes people worshiping a pagan god and practicing jihad are already his for the taking. He doesn't care if they live or die. He is focused on the motivation more than anything else, said Lorraine. You mean that celebrating the deaths of millions of Muslims might buy you a ticket to hell? Asked Dick. I'm afraid that's true, said Lorraine. Our meeting here is just about over. Would you follow me to join the president for dinner? Asked Lorraine. The president? Asked Donna. Yeah, right. I am wearing the same clothes now for 3 days, said Katie. Relax. We're family, said Dick. Yeah, shared experience, said Kyle, straightening his wrinkled shirt as he stood up from the large, comfortable chairs in the White House solarium. Just follow me. This should be a little reunion for you all, said Lorraine. They walked down the main hallway and took the stairs, as there were too many of them to use the elevator at once. Sarah met them at the bottom of the stairs on the ground floor. Right this way, ma'am. I think they're ready for you, she said. You're coming too, said Lorraine, grabbing Sarah's hand and squeezing gently. She had a good heart, and her soul was growing every day. Already there was a different future for this girl than the foggy desperation she had felt a few days ago. They entered the White House dining room as a group through the large double doors. Riker was standing just inside the doorway and greeted them one by one with a firm handshake. Dick, it's so good to see you, and you as well, Kyle. It is amazing that you were in the neighborhood, he said, smiling broadly. And these are... Oh, this is Katie, and this is Donna. They're the bloggers that discovered the missing nukes, said Dick. We met them at the Oak Ridge National Labs, said Kyle nervously. The world owes you a debt of gratitude, said Riker. We'll see, Mr. President. I don't know if we were in time. If it wasn't for your two friends here, we would still be screaming on the web for someone to listen to us, said Katie. Oh, they were listening, said Kyle. Yeah, we kind of had to break them out of federal custody, said Dick. I heard about that, said Riker. Good work, again. You know, these two guys are heroes around here, right? He said to the two girls, who both smiled. At that moment, another group arrived at the doorway. The first man ducked under the 6'8" doorway and entered like a gentle giant. Oh, my God, Rhino, it is good to see you again, said Kyle, throwing a bear hug around his chest. Hey, guys, this is Lisa. She's my assistant, said Rhino, taking Lisa's hand and leading her around his body to meet the rest of the group. Most excellent, said Dick, shaking her hand and winking his eye at Rhino, whose paper-white teeth made an enormous smile against his light brown skin. He reached forward and the two slapped hands together in a brother's handshake. I'm glad to see you too, Kyle, said Rhino. Entering the room behind Rhino was Bette, Loretta, and finally Agent Smith with Jones walking beside him. Whoa, he lives, said Dick, seeing Smith and shaking his right hand. Mr. Daring, good to see you, said Smith. Bette slipped her hand on top of Smith's shoulders and looked over his shoulder at Dick. Hey, driver, how have you been? She asked. Shiny side up, he said, motioning for her to give him a hug. You been eating right? You feel a little scrawny, she asked. Oh, yeah, nothing but health food, you know, he said. Yeah, what's that, Taco Bell? She asked. Hey, no fried foods, right? He defended himself. Yeah, they won the restaurant wars in L.A., chimed in Kyle, who also hugged Bette. You guys watch too many movies, she said. And ESPN, responded Kyle as he stepped back from Bette to shake Smith's hand. At that moment, Shelley and Orphan entered the room. Hey, guys, said Orphan. I heard they put you in the wall, said Dick. Yeah, they got me pretty good. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Orphan, though, and Bette and Agent Smith, she added. They each found a chair around the large dining table and sat down. It was a formal room, but no one except Riker was in a suit. He took off his jacket and loosened his tie and sat in the center seat on the side of the table. The heads at both ends were empty. "Oh, good evening, Chef Bailey. How are you this evening?" asked Lorraine. He smiled and tipped his white chef's hat to her. "It is so much my pleasure to cook for you tonight. I can tell you this is going to be a special night, so I have brought out some bottles of excellent California Cabernet. You know, Benjamin Franklin once said, 'Wine is sure proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy,'" he said, putting his hands together softly. "You haven't been here that long, have you?" asked Lorraine. "Almost. And thanks to you, my dear Lorraine, I'm not retiring anytime soon," he said. "I'm sure we will all be thankful of that when we experience your love," she said, smiling back at him. "I cannot express my gratitude that we could all be here," said Riker, as Hadid slipped into the room and gently closed the doors together. "Every president has a challenge that seems to begin within months of their inauguration, but none has ever faced the end of the world." "Or the beginning of a new one," said Lorraine, looking at him with a smile. "That too," he said, placing his hand around the glass that was being poured full of the aromatic Cabernet. "Mr. President, there probably is no chance that the nukes headed for Europe can be found before they reach their destination. The whole process we have been able to uncover looks like an inside job," said Katie boldly. "Is anyone going to be able to stop this?" she asked. "Jones, you're probably the best one to answer this one," said Riker. "Well, you're almost right. We have evidence that there is an intelligence that has been integrated with operations since before we had operations. I mean, for hundreds, if not thousands of years. I know that sounds off the wall, but the very technology that we are using today around the world was probably introduced by this very same mind and works to the benefit of this one will," he said as he took a sip of wine and leaned forward in his chair. "We have been at war for more than 100 years, and there are currently 54 countries at some stage of active fighting around the world right now. All of the violence is directed primarily by jihadis. Add to that the concerted effort to dismantle the United States by banks and bureaucrats and the previous presidential administration, and we have an enemy that looks and smells like us. I mean, they have been skillful at making us fight one another instead of them. Now, this new twist that they plan to nuke the two most holy sites in all of Islam has us with our hands in our own pockets. We don't know what to do or how to stop it," said Jones. "I'm afraid there's more as well," began Riker. "The planet is decoupling on an hourly basis now. There could be other effects besides just earthquakes and volcanoes. Professor, can you fill us in?" "Yes, sir," began Loretta. "The two planets are decoupling almost on an hourly basis now. According to our calculations, they should be nearing an equinox around the first full moon in October. We think that when the cross-section of the two planets begins shrinking from their full diameter, the cataclysms will intensify." "The model was completed by Lisa yesterday," offered Rhino. "The harmonic spikes will really put the oceans in motion." "Like the ones I saw in the Gulf," said Orphan. "Exactly," said Rhino. "And the two planets we saw out of the window of the Gulf Stream, that wasn't just an optical illusion?" asked Dick. "No. The two planets are now much further separated. It's just that we are in between points where very large amplitude harmonics would be generated," said Lisa, using her voice for the first time. "That makes the waves?" asked Orphan. "Yes, and I'm afraid there are other more cataclysmic effects as well," said Lisa. "Mountains into valleys, perhaps even stars falling from heaven," said Lorraine quietly with her distant eyes. "We'll be safe here, right?" asked Kyle. "This is not the safest location on the East Coast," said Riker. "We are preparing to retreat to the Raven Rock Mountain if something comes up." Stuff like this might come on too fast even for the Challenger, said Dick. We're trying to manage the transition over the next few weeks. It is a matter of personnel, not facilities, said Riker. I don't know if anyone noticed, but Chef Bailey's wine selection is pretty damn good, said Kyle. Hell yeah, said Dick. With that, everyone relaxed a little as the salads were being brought to the table. This is a Caesar dressing of my own recipe. I hope you like it, said Chef Bailey. I am sure. I only thought I had a Caesar salad before this, said Bette, rolling her eyes with delight. I don't need the recipe, because I'm never leaving this place. And if I do, you're coming with me, Chef Bailey, said Lorraine. We have all night, right? Said Kyle, and everyone laughed. Isn't this amazing? Asked Bette. I'm a Secret Service agent. When do I get to eat like this? Responded Smith, holding his hand over his full mouth. Roger that, said Jones. Is it my fault you guys are fast food junkies? Asked Riker. Yes, said Jones and Smith simultaneously, and everyone laughed again. If it were possible, the meal of shrimp, large scallions, and angel hair pasta with lemon garlic butter was even more amazing. The portions left room for the wine and warm conversation as the small group of unlikely heroes found respite in the peace of linen and crystal and love.